Three. All right, everyone, it's the Grimlord here, and I'm back with another video. This is the Games and Rants show, and I've got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And we're going to talk about whatever the hell I can find to talk about, because there's a lot of articles, some from the past and some from right now, that I can go over. But the most important thing, I think, other than the Black National Anthem, which we already talked about, is like the stupidest
football season. So
yeah, there is a new article here.
Actually, it's been around. It was meant for Abraham Lincoln's birthday, to be honest with you. But black people said, the guy freed the slaves, black people. It's close enough.
Oh, damn it. All right, hold on, folks, because the article that I was going to show is not only full of ads, I mean full of ads.
I'll tell you, while you're thinking about that, if anyone wanted to, I thought was an interesting thing to look up, is look up the mural of George Floyd that got struck by lightning.
You know, we can. Yeah, we'll talk about that for a minute. It took out the face, the entire face of Floyd. It didn't take out anything else. It didn't take out any of the sides or nothing. Yeah. It didn't even take out the bottom part of the body. It only took out his face. Yeah.
But I mean, and it took it down to the mortar.
Everything.
Bricks lying on the ground. And everything else on the mural was still there. But the face was completely removed.
It makes you think there's something going on.
God.
It makes you think. I don't know. It makes you think there's something going on for sure.
Well, if people are going to believe in ancient aliens, they can give this a shot. You know, this is like, were aliens probing people just for their sexual pleasure? Most alien experts say yes. You know, they always say fucking yes. There's never a moment of doubt for those theorists.
Oh, I know.
And then their hair isn't combed. They can't find anyone that knows how to fix their hair in the morning.
Who are we talking about here?
Ancient aliens on
you're talking about
History
like
Channel.
None of them. Oh, this was 16 hours ago. Thank you, archive.is, for making my job a whole hell of a lot easier. And look, no ads. Okay. Three Texas Democrats who fled to Washington test positive for coronavirus. Three Texas Democrats who fled to Washington this past week to prevent voting restrictions from being passed in their state have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to a statement from the Texas House Democratic Caucus. On Friday night, one member of the caucus tested positive for the virus that causes COVID and immediately informed the rest of the caucus. Members and staff then took rapid tests, all of which were negative. Pardon me. The caucus also consulted current CDC guidance, which says that fully vaccinated people who have been exposed to someone who tested positive do not need to take any additional precautions unless they are showing symptoms, the caucus stated, suggesting that the first member who tested positive may not have been symptomatic. On Saturday morning, two additional members tested positive, the leaders said. All three members were fully vaccinated. Caucus leaders did not identify any of the members. This is a sober reminder that COVID is still with us, and though vaccinations offer tremendous protection, we must still take necessary precautions, House Democratic Caucus Chairman Chris Turner said in a statement. We are in touch with public health experts in Texas to provide additional guidance. Our caucus will follow all recommendations from public health experts as we continue our work. At least 50 members of the caucus left their state abruptly Monday to deny state Republicans a quorum during an ongoing special session and prevent the passage of a restrictive new voting bill. The Texas Democrats who flew to Washington have been staying at an unidentified hotel in the area, and have said they plan to stay out of Texas until August 7th when the special session ends. Texas House Speaker Dade Fallon said he would charter a plane to demand Democrats return to Texas this weekend. On Saturday, extended prayers for safety and health to those who had tested positive while in Washington. My staff has reached out to Dr. John Hellerstedt, Commissioner of the Texas Department of State Services, and all this other stuff. Okay, that's not important. While in Washington, the Texas House Democrats have held numerous high-profile news conferences and meetings with, including Vice President Harris and Senator Joe Manchin, all to implore Congress to pass federal voting rights legislation. Harris spokeswoman Simone Sanders said Saturday it was determined that the vice president and her staff were not at risk of exposure based on timeline of positive tests and because they were not in close contact with members who tested positive. However, the Democrats have admitted that they do not have a long-term playbook and that their quorum-breaking gambit could only delay Texas Republicans' effort to get new voting registrations restrictions.
Yeah.
Passed. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has vowed to call additional special sessions until the voting measures there pass, and he has threatened Democratic state lawmakers who left the state with arrest.
They should. That's treason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, arrest is the least of what used to be with treason. It used to be a firing squad. But, you know, if you put the shoe on the other foot, and Republicans were doing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
First, the Republicans that ended up getting COVID, you'd have Democrats like, well, I hope they die, burn in hell, and all that. And then the others, you know, they would already had them hunted down and thrown in jail. Because it's rules for me, not for thee.
Now, let's go to another one. This is actually going to not go on YouTube because we're talking about things. And that's going to happen with a lot of our games and rant shows because, you know, that's kind of, I guess, an exclusive. Because I'll do my article shows and I'll put those on YouTube as normal. But the games and rant stuff is going to be purely on alternative media. There's no way in hell we're going to be able to talk about this kind of stuff on YouTube. All right, so, NewsNationNow.com. This is actually taken from NextStar Wire, NextStar Media Wire, and Associated Press, which are both accredited sources. Just News Nation are the ones that are reporting on it. So, basically, this article here, it says, are the January 6th rioters traitors? So far, their criminal charges say no. This is from the Chicago Associated Press. Plotted to block the certification of Joe Biden's victory. Joe Biden's election victory. Check. Discussed bringing weapons into Washington to aid in the plan. Check. Seceded with co-insurrectionists, if only temporarily, and stopping Congress from carrying out a vital constitutional duty. Check. Accusations against January 6th rioter Thomas Caldwell certainly seem to fit the charges additions as it's greatly understood, inciting revolt against the government. And the possibility of charging him and others was widely discussed after thousands of pro-Trump supporters assaulted scores of police officers, defaced the U.S. Capitol, and hunted for lawmakers to stop the certification. Yeah, they really did try to exaggerate this. They ballooned it out. Some called their actions treasonous. But to date, neither Caldwell nor any of the other more than 500 defendants accused in the attack has been indicted for sedition or for the gravest of crimes a citizen can face, treason. And as an increasing number of lesser charges are filed and defendants pled guilty, those accusations may never be formally levied. Some legal scholars say that sedition charges could be justified, but that prosecutors may be reluctant to bring them because of their legal complexity and their difficulty historically in securing convictions. Overzealousness in applying them goes back centuries. Hold on. Overzealousness in applying them going back centuries has also discredited their use. Can't read today. And defense attorneys say discussions of such charges only add to the hyperbole around the events of that day. Overall, the bar for proving sedition isn't as high as it is for the related charge of treason. Still, sedition charges have been rare. The last time U.S. prosecutors brought such a case was in 2010, and an alleged Michigan plot by members of the Hutari Militia. I don't even know who the Hutari or Hutari Militia is, to incite an uprising against the government. But a judge ordered acquittals on the sedition conspiracy charges at a 2012 trial, saying that prosecutors relied too much on hateful diatribes protected by the First Amendment and didn't, as required, prove the accused ever had detailed plans for rebellion. Among the last successful convictions for seditious conspiracy stem from another now largely forgotten storming of the Capitol in 1954. When four Puerto Rican nationalists opened fire on the House floor, wounding five representatives. Treason is one of the few crimes specifically defined in the Constitution. It's defined as levying war against the U.S. or giving aid and comfort to its enemies. Legal scholars say the Founding Fathers, who were themselves accused of treason by the British, sought to clearly articulate it because they knew the potential to misapply it to legitimate dissent. In a landmark ruling in 1807, Chief Justice John Marshall wrote that treason required a citizen to actually go to war against the United States, not to just brainstorm or draw up plans for it. Even recruiting and training rebels for war, he argued, isn't treason if war is never engaged. In the history of the U.S., the government has convicted fewer than 10 people for treason, according to the FBI. Wow. Among the last treason cases was American-born Eva Tagore D'Aquino, known as Tokyo Rose during World War II for anti-American broadcasts, convicted in 1949 of giving aid and comfort to Japan. President Gerald Ford pardoned her in 77 after reports U.S. authorities pressured some witnesses to lie. Wow. The only American charged with treason since the World War II era was Adam Godin, indicted in 2006 for giving aid and comfort to Al-Qaeda. Before he could be tried, he was killed by a U.S. drone strike in Pakistan. But they took care of him in that way, I guess. Carlton Larson, a University of California law professor and author of On Treason, A Citizen's Guide to the Law, ruled out treason for the January 6 rioters. But he believes some qualify for a provision of seditious conspiracy on hindering the execution of U.S. laws. I think it easily fits, he said. Last summer, then-Deputy Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen sent a memo allowing federal prosecutors to consider sedition charges against police reform demonstrators, particularly in Portland, Oregon, where clashes between rioters and federal authorities raged outside a federal courthouse. It was never used. But the memo said that the Justice Department believed the statute doesn't require proof of a plot to overthrow the government and could also be used when a defendant tries to oppose the government's authority by force. In the weeks after the Capitol attack, federal prosecutors said they were looking at all possible charges. Washington's then-acting U.S. Attorney Michael Sherwin told CBS 60 Minutes on March the 17th that prosecutors were mulling seditious conspiracy charges against some rioters. I believe the facts do support those charges, Sherwin said, and I think that as we go forward, more facts will support that. He had first floated the possibility in January, saying a special group of prosecutors was examining whether they would apply to any rioters. The Justice Department did not respond to questions about what happened to that group or why no sedition charges were ever brought. And Sherwin's comments were criticized by a federal judge and defense lawyers who said it was inappropriate to discuss ongoing investigations publicly. He left the Justice Department soon after. The Justice Department is continuing its work to prosecute a record number of cases, but they have so far opted for a comparatively run-of-the-mill charges like entering restricted area and obstructing an official proceeding. Caldwell faces those charges as well as conspiracy, which, like sedition, carries a maximum 20-year prison term. Treason carries a possible death sentence. He has been charged alongside other members and associates of the far-right Oath Keepers extremist group with conspiring to block the vote certification. He later boasted in a message to a friend about grabbing an American flag, joining the crowd that surged towards the Capitol, and saying, "Let's storm the place and hang the traitors." The 65-year-old from Virginia told his friend, "If we'd had guns, I guarantee we'd killed 100 politicians." Defense attorneys say hyperbole has been a hallmark of January 6 prosecutions. If grandiose rhetoric was evidence, the government's case would be very strong, Caldwell's lawyer, David Fisher, wrote in one filing. He didn't respond to a message seeking comment. In filings, Fisher also said prosecutors took his client's words out of context to falsely accuse an ailing 20-year military veteran. He said Caldwell, like many veterans, was prone to puffery and enjoyed portraying himself and recounting his actions on January 6th as a movie character who picks up a battle flag to lead the charge. Fisher also asked Caldwell's Washington judge this month to transfer Caldwell's case to another city on grounds Sherwin's comments regarding sedition would prejudice jurors. On January the 5th, another writer, Guy Reffitt, allegedly spoke of dragging people out of the Capitol by their ankles and installing a new government. The 48-year-old Texan came prepared for battle on January 6th carrying a gun and wearing body armor as he passed through Capitol Police lines as officers shot him with rubber bullets, prosecutors said. Charges against Reffitt include entering a restricted building with a deadly weapon as well as obstructing justice by threatening his teenage children. The oil industry consultant allegedly told them later in January that they'd be traitors if they turned him in. He added, "Traitors get shot." In an unapologetic note written from jail and filed with the court in May, Reffitt denied there ever having been a conspiracy and provided a chilling reason. "If overthrow of the government was the quest," Reffitt wrote about January 6th, "it would have no doubt been overthrown." Well, listen to that again. "If overthrow of the government was the quest, it would have no doubt been overthrown."
Yeah.
A lot of people have said that. If they were trying to overthrow the government.
And any of the footage
that
you
more
look
or less
at,
would have happened.
It looks like a setup more than it does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And let's think about it.
And they still hadn't, gave the family of Ashley Babbitt any peace.
Oh, no. And let's think about it. The damn, all these people are old. I mean, 48, not necessarily old, but, not 20s. And then, of course, you've got the guy in his 60s. Come on, these are older people. They were, they're just trying to, just like they did with John Schaefer of Iced Earth. They were like, oh, this guy's gonna, no. It's all stupid. And, again, they talked about the thing in Portland, Oregon. Where they actually did shit, like kill people,
fatalities on police are at record numbers.
Yeah.
I think killed 23 people in a certain amount of time. I don't know if it's
Some kids were actually killed. It's pretty hardcore.
Police couldn't get in because the whatever it was, Antifa had taken over the block.
Yep,
died because they interfered, wouldn't let police come in get them.
And they actually killed the people that they were supposed to stand for, black people. There were black people that were killed.
Oh, yeah.
In this shit.
David Dorn.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. Pretty awful. And, of course, they threw it out. They threw it out completely. Don't care about that.
It's because it's the Democratic cause.
Yep. And throw it out. Just like they do with fucking everything.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm not going to read about the child tax credits. Oh, here's one. This is a completely different, not political, but worth talking about.
Yeah.
Of course, Drexel said that's just a German Shepherd being a German Shepherd. Steelers quarterback Haskins loses a tooth. Wife arrested after dispute at the Cosmopolitan. Las Vegas. The wife of Pittsburgh Steeler backup quarterback Dwayne Haskins is charged with domestic battery after a July 3rd incident at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. Calabria? Gondrasik Haskins? 23. Is accused of knocking out one of his teeth when she punched him after a disagreement. Jesus, according to an arrest report obtained by the I-Team, a piece of his tooth was found on the floor of a room at the Cosmopolitan. Haskins told Metro police officers the couple have had verbal arguments in the past, but nothing physical, till now. "I want her out of my room," Haskins told a security officer at the Cosmopolitan. Yeah, they do that. She hit me and cut my lip open. According to Dwayne's Instagram and several news articles, the couple was recently engaged at Tao Asian Bistro and Nightclub at the Venetian. Wow! The minute he engages her, she knocks his fucking tooth out. Contradicting
the... engaged or engages?
No. They recently engaged. Yeah. They got engaged.
Because engaging her put them up. Put them up. Bam!
She put them up, all right. Damn. Contracting the engagement reports. Calabira told police they were planning to celebrate their commitment to each other by renewing their vows, according to statements contained in an arrest report. They reportedly married on March 19th after dating for about a year and a half. The couple, who lives in Pittsburgh, was in Las Vegas for a wedding with 14 of their friends.
Honeymoon's over already, huh?
Yeah. The dispute stemmed from plans for social outing. Calabria and her friends, I don't know, it's a really weird name, Calabria, and her friends were going to a Magic Mike show. Because of course they were. And Dwayne and his friends were going to Dry's Beach Club and Nightclub. So they were both going to basically...
places that mainly married people probably
Maybe
like engaged for a bachelor party.
Well, they just got engaged, and then they were going...
Figured they were gonna... they were already married at that point, it sounded like. Because they were there for the wedding. Unless it's someone else's wedding.
And it says, instead of waiting for Calabria and the others, Dwayne and his friends went without them. When they returned, the fight got physical. Haskins was treated for facial injuries at Sunrise Hospital and Medical Center. Haskins Gondrzik was not in handcuffs during her interview with detectives because she had hurt her hand. Wow!
I'm sure.
Man, if I hurt my hand... Oh, that's okay. We won't put you in handcuffs.
No.
Man, they're gonna put you in fucking handcuffs. You see that shit all the time. I've watched enough cops to know that. Oh, I hit my hand. What are you doing putting the handcuffs on me? Yeah, right. But the little woman. Oh, I hurt my hand. Oh, it's okay. We won't put the handcuffs on you.
It's a double standard.
Uh-huh.
Just like the kids in a divorce.
Haskins was signed by the Steelers after he was released by the Washington football team in December and is the backup for starting quarterback Beth Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger. We're not there yet. We're not there yet to women in men's football. He had been drafted by Washington with a number 15 pick overall in 2019. He set records in sophomore season at Ohio State, where he threw 50 touchdowns, one of just 7 NCAA quarterbacks to do it in a single season. Haskins Gondrzik played basketball at Michigan State University. She's the daughter of Grant Gondrzik and Lisa Harvey Gondrzik, and her sister Kasira was the 4th overall pick in last year's WNBA draft, playing for the Indiana Fever. She has posted bail and expected to appear back in court on August the 3rd.
Ain't that crazy? Your fiance send you to jail?
Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, we have some chats. We actually have chats in here.
Alright, I like chats.
Hoshioni says God is racist.
Which part?
I guess the fact that, I don't know, they God is depicted as white and they took down the black man's mural.
I mean... let's not point fingers. I mean, a white man's a white man. He did no wrong. That sounds like a white man. I'll play.
They should be filed for treason against Texas, he said. Then Invader Tech, as RPM says, a man can only take so much disrespect. Right. RPM, I think he did a new hockey mask time, so you may want to check that out. 177. I haven't even seen it yet. What else have we got here today in my articles? Well, we have... okay, we're gonna go... because there's so many different things.
Well, you know, and when they talk about an insurrection, which I think it was so far from an insurrection, it was closer to a peaceful protest than anything that happened in Portland. And is the same argument that they used for Portland could be used for that, is the people's voices weren't being heard. Now, I don't, like I said, I think a lot of that was a setup because they did find Antifa members dressed, posed as Trump supporters there, and, you know, I think other militia too. And pretty much it wasn't as organized. There's probably 5 people that were keeping in contact by email out of all those people that were going in the White House. And the videos show they were being guided through the White House. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's nothing different now. Like, if you're a Republican, your voice is probably the furthest from anything anyone's going to pay attention to on the Democratic side, for sure.
Right.
There's no open minds on the Democratic side. At least the Republican side will hear you out and make a rational decision. But when you lead all your solutions with feelings, it's never going to go too far.
All right. Well, now we've got another article from Sora News. This was a little old, but I hadn't seen much talk about it. Real life doesn't work like anime. Tokyo man arrested after letting schoolgirl live with him. You'd expect most people to realize this was a bad idea, but this guy especially. Among the anime that premiered this spring was Hagihiro. After being rejected, I shaved and took in a high school runaway. It came out. This
sounds so terrible, but it's hilarious.
This lengthy title covers most of the premise, as it's a story about a single young adult salaryman who lets a runaway schoolgirl live with him while she figures out what the next stage of her life is going to be. It's not the most preposterous setup ever for an anime series, but it's definitely a case where the situation would quickly lose just about any pretense of wholesomeness in real life. As proof, 29-year-old Takahiro Kamiya has been arrested following 4 days of cohabitating with a high school girl who ran away from home. The two had been acquainted through social media, where the girl posted about wanting to leave home, eventually telling Kamiya, "I'd be happy if you'd give me an option of running away to your place." He agreed, and on June 13th, the girl made her way from home in Saitama Prefecture, which borders Tokyo to the north, to Komiya's condominium in Tokyo's Chiyoda Ward. The girl's parents, who were unaware of what their daughter had done, contacted the police when she didn't come home that night. The ensuing search led them to Kamiya's condo, where he and the girl were both present. Kamiya has admitted to the course of events outlined above and was placed under arrest on suspicion of abducting a minor. The girl showed no sign of injury. There's perhaps a claim to be made that since the girl was apparently the one who initially floated the idea of living at the condo at and came of her own free will at once he agreed, that abducting isn't the right word for what he did. That's a semantics argument, though, and in the eyes of the law, sure, when a minor asks if they can live with you without their parents' consent, it's still generally considered kidnapping. Granted, that's something laymen might not realize on their own, but with Kamiya being a lawyer by profession, you'd expect him to have been conscious of the legal ramifications of what he was doing.
Yep, that whole lawyer thing, that really hurts him.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they expect you to be the adult in the situation. Be like, "No, you can't stay with me, you delicious young lady." No, it sounds terrible.
This one, okay. And I guess, let's see. We got one, maybe we'll do one more.
We got time. It's
okay.
12:16.
Okay. How romanticism encouraged the decline of marriage. This is from Intellectual Takeout. This year, a Pew report, now this is 2019, but it's still important. This year, a Pew report on love and marriage in America stated an obvious fact. The institution of marriage in our society is continuing its slide towards cultural obsolescence. Only half of adults continue to bother with marriage, while a significant minority prefer the unconstrained alternative of cohabitation. This last category is up nearly 30% from a decade ago. Of those who choose marriage, half will end in divorce. The statistics speak for themselves, but while the sexual revolution and Irreligiosity of the nuns and their mutual effects on marriage are often discussed. Few realize that the waning of Western marriage began long before our time, during the 19th century age of Romanticism. At first, it seems counterintuitive. After all, wasn't the 19th century the age of Jane Austen and Walter Scott, the authors whose heroes and heroines experienced true love leading irresistibly toward a bond of marriage and happily ever after? To be sure, the 19th century refinement of romance, whereby men and women cultivated and enjoyed new levels of emotional attachment, has brought benefits to modern marriage, but romanticism is something else. It regards the emotional bond within marriage as an end in itself, the principal meaning of the relationship, and the basis for its permanency. And its emergence 2 centuries ago marked the beginning of the slide towards singlehood we see today. Romanticism's corrosive properties can be seen in the lives of its greatest proponents. For the English poet Percy Bysshe Shelley, marriage is hateful, detestable. A celebrated bard of romantic love, he declared that a kind of ineffable, sickening disgust seizes my mind when I think of this most despotic, most unrequited fetter. Romantics like Shelley built relationships on the shifting sands of passions, which inevitably prevented their endurance, as suggested by his poem Mutability. True love was defined in his verse as passion, desire, rather than self-sacrifice, the moral virtue that marriage had historically crowned. Liberated from the fetters of Christian values, he was an atheist. Shelley deserted his pregnant wife and ran off to the Alps with an alluring girl named Mary, who he later married when his first wife, in her grief, committed suicide. Inspired by the affair, Mary herself went on to write one of the Romanticism's greatest literary monuments, Frankenstein. A case similar to Shelley's is George Sand, 1876, a female French writer who abandoned a husband and 2 children to pursue more intense and therefore more rewarding relationships than she could find in lawful marriage. From the moment of her divorce to that of her death, she managed to write more than 50 novels, most of which celebrated a heroine's restless longing for emotional fulfillment, whatever the cost to those around her. Along the way, Sand herself entered and then exited a series of affairs so numerous as to defy calculation. Wow. Perhaps the most notoriously inconstant romantic lover was Richard Wagner. Like Shelley and Sand, he abandoned the... You know, I think this is Richard Wagner, not Wagner, as in... the spouse of an early marriage to pursue free love. In doing so, he abandoned any respect for marriage. One anecdote from his adultery-ridden life has him seducing the wife of a close friend and supporter, then going on to sire children by her for years. In the end, he claimed her as his own wife, but his pursuit of extramarital romance continued to his dying day. It is said that his death by a heart attack was provoked by a confrontation with her after she discovered yet another case of a serial and all-too-romantic marital infidelity. It is therefore no surprise that the content of Wagner's opera served to subvert marriage. From the adultery of Tristan and Isolde, to the incest of Die Walküre, whose Ride of the Valkyries became a canon of Western musical culture, moral transgression was presented as far more heroic than marital fidelity, which makes the famous tune from another opera particularly ironic. The Wedding March from Lohengrin has become, without question, the sine qua non for millions of brides as they march down the aisle to a union that, according to recent statistics, is as likely to end in divorce as not. So, as we look back on the age of Romanticism, we can delight in the ways it celebrated love, but we would do well to recognize that by rooting marriage in the passions, the founders of our modern culture actually undermined what many consider the foundations of a devoted relationship between husband and wife. So basically, all these romanticists, they basically created love based on passion rather than... Most marriages were actually done for reasons that weren't necessarily...
Yeah, back in the day.
And that seems to be the problem, which they're trying to say. Because marriage isn't necessarily... Like, again, it's based on love and romance, which is fleeting. Because when people fall out of love, then they decide to get divorced. Oh, well, we're not in love anymore. Yeah. But that's actually not what marriage was supposed to be about.
Well, you know, they were say, like, places with arranged marriages, the couples end up usually getting together or getting along a lot better.
Yes. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense there.
Oh, yeah.
This is also by the author of The Rise and Fall of What the West Was. So that might be interesting. Now, here is one we should go to. And I wasn't sure if I was going to cover this today or tomorrow, but I think we have enough time.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, this is from This Is Why I'm Single. And this one, this is a very interesting... You might laugh a little bit at this one. What are beta males, and why are women chasing them now? I didn't realize. You've heard of alpha males, but are you familiar with betas? They're the ones who don't break your heart and that you can actually settle down with.
Oh, the
nice guys, if you will. There's a reason that more and more women are trading in the bad boys of their past for these gentlemen. What? Where? Let us share some of these reasons with you. Forget about men who spend their every waking minute at the gym only for their arms to look like clouds while their legs look like sticks. Instead, beta males have a more holistic approach towards life and are careful in how they carry themselves. Instead of impulsively texting you for a one-night stand, they plan dates. Tinder may have brought on a hookup culture, but already since then, even dating apps have been used for more serious relationships. Bad boys don't work for women anymore. Ah, yeah, alright. And women are looking for a man who could actually be emotionally available and respect them. Meanwhile, they're calling guys like Drex in the back. Oh, I need a real man. A man who's gonna blow my back out. Unfortunately, when some people hear the word beta, they sometimes think it means weakness. My old roommate was the definition of toxic masculinity. He told his parents the other night that all guys who go to the gym are betas, while he is a biological alpha, and then proceeded to make fun of out-of-shape people at the gym. A beta male's sole intention in bed isn't to show off or to be selfish. Instead, he is careful and wants to make sure that you are comfortable and happy. He doesn't try to get you drunk to take you home. Instead, he actually asks what is okay and what you would rather do. Most women fucking admit they hate that shit. Alpha males have emotions, but they think they need to shove them down in order to be more manly. Beta males acknowledge that feelings are normal and even human. They are willing to work on themselves and try their best to communicate and be upfront. They don't feel threatened. While social media often pushes us to rely on external validation to feed our egos, beta males find security within themselves. They're comfortable with who they are and where they're at in life, but that doesn't mean that they're not open to challenges while feeling threatened. They may be quiet, but they're confident. Beta males are quiet yet confident. Don't think beta men are boring. They may be introverts, but they're interesting to the core, and once they dabble in a conversation, they're quite confident in how they carry it forward. They're your knight in shining armor. Oh my god. I should have saved this one for when I had the alcohol.
Maybe a what not?
Beta males have a protective instinct, and they generally want to look out for your... Oh, miss, this should have been an alcohol article. Want to look for your best interest. They're not necessarily comfortable with being in the spotlight, but they won't shy away from it if it means protecting you in the process. They're interested in more than themselves. Alpha males put so much of their lives into seeking validation from others, so they try to be charismatic or good-looking. The beta male is instead complimented for his charm, good looks, and charisma. A beta male spends his life establishing a foundation of interesting hobbies and creative activities. They appreciate the little things. Beta males are emotionally in tune enough to recognize when you've gone out of your way to do something nice for them. This means that your relationship dynamics tend to be equal and they tend to give as much as they take.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of conversation can be had on this.
Commitment doesn't make them run. If we had to vote on number one issue we have with men, it's their inability to commit to a relationship.
Honestly, when you think about it, women almost are repulsed by comfort and stability.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, if you get with the beta guy, only I think problems with that would be is a lot of betas put women on too high of a pedestal.
Sure.
And especially either they don't live up to their expectations or they realize they don't live up to their expectations. And, yeah, it'll fuck their world up.
Oh, yeah. With a beta male, you have no reason to worry about them texting their ex or leaving you for another woman. They'll always be honest about where they stand and open to the idea of finding a partner to share their life with. They actively try to respect woman. There has been a movement lately where men have been trying to understand woman's experiences more in order to give them more and give them a better life experience. Beta males pay attention to these movements and usually give priority to respect. Beta males don't always need to go out. Beta males are more often homebodies than big partiers. You never have to worry that they're still holding on to their frat boy ways. They make for great Netflix buddies, and they may even let you get away with a rom-com here and there.
I mean, that could be with alpha males, too.
They make great fathers. Beta males make for great models as husbands and fathers. They want their kids to learn how to respect women and break the barriers of toxic masculinity. If they lead by example, their kids will grow up to be as confident and respectful as they are. He doesn't try to confront you. Beta males actually factor in your opinion. They let you make your needs heard. In other words, they let you walk all over them.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes you might just have to pressure them into telling you what they want to because they're consistently prioritizing your wants over theirs. What do beta men want? A beta falls for a woman because of how she makes him feel about himself. Oh my god. They're not simply trying to fill a void, but genuinely have a craving for companionship that complements and fits into their lifestyle. You can count on them to have the right intentions.
My god.
That's horseshit.
I think,
where's Terrence Pop?
Part of why women don't like that so much is because, to a certain extent, you can be kind to women and respectful and polite and all that, but doing it all the time and always putting them first is not human nature. Like, you're basically telling them I'm putting on an act, because honestly, if you're going with your nature, you'd be doing the same thing the alpha male is. The only thing is, they're not confident enough to act on their impulses, so they resort to, I'm a nice guy, I wouldn't rape you if the opportunity arose, or I wouldn't throw myself at you, I guess is a nicer term, not necessarily rape. I think anybody can keep themselves from raping, I guess.
Yeah.
But definitely, yeah. I mean, it's not your nature to, oh, well, I'm going to let you take as much time as you want and all that. I'm pretty easygoing. I could go to a certain extent, but I'd be like, well, you have till like Wednesday to make up your mind because I want to do something by Thursday.
Right. Let's see. We got one last article. Democrats look to crush states' highway habit. This just came out. The proposed changes are riling up opposition from state transportation departments and the road building lobby. House Democrats are trying to use a massive climate and infrastructure bill to change how Americans get around by breaking states' decades-old fondness for building highways. Legislation the House passed this month is the biggest advance yet in Democrats' efforts to bait climate policies into transportation, addressing the largest single contributor to the United States greenhouse gas output. It would also represent a historic shift away from the roads first approach to federal transportation spending that has reigned since Dwight Eisenhower created the interstate highway system. But the bill is riling up opposition from two potential allies of the Democrats' big spending infrastructure initiative: the State Transportation Department and the Road Building Lobby. That creates an awkward dynamic for supporters of the House bill, which faces a perilous path through the evenly divided Senate. Critics say that the five-year, $549 billion bill, Jesus, would represent one-size-fits-all Washington meddling at its worst. There are 50 different states with 50 different sets of transportation challenges. What is right for one may not be right for another, said Dave Bauer, CEO of the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, which supports many of the bill's provisions and principles. It's really hard to determine that 5 years at a time from Washington, D.C. The bill supporters say the old system is unsustainable. We have to begin to look at alternatives. House Transportation Chair and bill sponsor Pete DeFazio told Politico in the run-up to the bill's passage in June, you can't pave over the whole country. The bill, H.R. 3684, would erect new bureaucratic handles for states seeking to spend federal money on laying asphalt while steering them to more climate-friendly options like transit. Well, I guess they're going to try to make it where people don't have cars anymore.
Well, the thing is, it's like the pipeline that Biden cut off.
Yeah.
They're coming up with all these plans for the future, but they don't have anything solid in motion. Like, yeah, we're going to cut the pipeline and buy from other people, but we're going green, everybody. When? You know, long after I'm dead.
Right.
I don't have to be accountable for it.
Right. It also would give cities more power over selecting and funding transportation projects, boosting the leverage of the Democratic-led enclaves in red states such as Texas, where Houston is engaged in a high-profile fight with the state's DOT over a highway expansion local polls don't want. The bill is, for now, separate from a compromised infrastructure bill backed by the Biden administration, key GOP senators, which would provide $579 billion in new spending, as well as a $3.5 trillion go-it-alone proposal that Democrats hope to approve by party-line votes. These chess pieces are separate for now, but portions of all three could end up blended together into whatever Congress ends up enacting. DeFazio said that state DOTs have reflexively built highways instead of looking at other alternatives, a habit that needs to change. As a rare exception, he pointed to Virginia's efforts to expand passenger rail service to combat perennially snarled traffic on Interstate 95. I'm not saying that you can't ever add highway capacity, but I'm saying you have to look at other alternatives. States have tended to use one primary strategy to tackle congestion, adding new highways or expanding existing ones. So, let's see here. I'm just trying, because this... Sometimes Politico likes to go, God, Politico, Jesus.
Oh, that's sometimes...
Yeah, I mean, we get the
idea. As anyone else.
We get the idea. Like, folks, this is like 24 fucking paragraphs. I'm just going to be absolutely honest with you. I mean, I'll just read that last statement. I think the federal government has every right to say, look, it's our money, and we are now in the process of redirecting and transitioning from a 1950s approach to something that more clearly reflects not just the moment, but the future, Alosi said.
Oh, no, we need to make this clear. It's not the government's money. It's our money that they're supposed to help make choices that benefit us.
Well, that's what he said. It said, look, the heading there says, look, it's our money. So they're basically saying, yeah.
It sounded like you're saying the government was saying.
Oh, well, no. Well, the government is trying to say it's our money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And we're now, yeah. So they're trying to say it's their.
It's not the government's money. And that's a big problem with the Democrat idea is it's all theirs, none for anybody else.
Well, the road workers. It has to do with the road workers. That's the.
Yeah, but something like that, I feel the road workers have a vote on at least.
It's just really stupid what they're trying to do.
They need to vote because.
Well, they're trying to make everything where you don't use, where everybody uses this one transportation system.
Yeah.
That's what they're really trying to do.
Not
they're just.
Work.
Yeah, but they're.
Because they're not willing to go out to rural communities for one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Until they come up with a better method of transportation, transit's not a better method. It's just packing a lot of people. I mean, it'd be convenient if everyone was in the same place, but especially in places, like I said, that have rural communities, Like, yeah, not everybody's spread out a lot more. You can't just all come to one spot. You think if we had to walk to town from where I live, that's a day's walk. I mean, ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Hoshione says, what? Oh, he shows a picture of the wall. That's what made women chase betas. Yeah, he's right. After women hit the wall, they're more likely going to choose the beta they're...
Settle down once they're used up.
Yep, that's it.
That's part of it.
And then Hoshione says, the green shit is about breaking America. I agree. I think it has a lot to do with that. Well, I think that's going to be the end of this show. We do have something else prepared after the show, so stay on for that. But I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will catch up with you next time. Hopefully we'll have some other articles to discuss.
Oh, yeah.
This will be the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration, and we are out.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.